Hi, this is Helen.
And this is Jessie.
And you're listening to Asian Bitches Down Under. We're recording on the 4th of April today, which is also on the lunar calendar for most Chinese friends out there.
And yay.
Some people with Chinese background who will celebrate to what we call a tomb sweeping,
yeah,
or ancestors Memorial Day, where traditionally a lot of Taiwanese families will go back to their grandparents or their hometowns, like the tomb or the grave, and then
yeah,
clean up, do a bit of rituals and eat food, have a drink, almost like a, it's not Christmas, but it's, you know, it's a Memorial Day for the dead of the dead or something like that, similar to the Latino ones, I'm guessing. Yeah,
not Jesus Christ, but our ancestors.
Yeah, so
an excuse to eat a lot of food, basically.
Yeah, I think there's a tradition that you don't eat hot food.
Really? Why is that?
Similar tradition for Japanese for the New Year's as well.
Why is that?
It's because that it's spring up in Northern Hemisphere, and most people will be preparing the food for the worshipping for most days. Well, by the end of the day, people don't want to cook. Mostly women who don't want to cook again. So the food they will prepare are usually the ones that you can eat cold as well. So it will be like rice cake. So this week I made the angu gui, which is the one of my favorite snack when I was little back in Taiwan.
Yeah. Can you explain to the listeners what it is?
Well, it's rice cake using the sort of red grain, red rice, sort of like the color to dye the rice cake, make it into redness, you know, the red color. And then they have a turtle shell mold where you put the rice cake on it, so you have the shape of the turtle shell on it. So, you know, turtle or tortoise symbolizes longevity.
Right.
And red symbolizes luck in Chinese culture anyway. So.
And what's inside the actual...
Oh, inside, usually red bean paste, azuki bean or mung bean paste. I think some people have peanut, you know, powder peanuts with sugar. So they taste quite nice too. Yeah, so I made a couple this week. They're not hard to make. It's just that you can't get them all. So I end up just drawing patterns on the... Yeah, and also you can eat the Taiwanese spring roll, lumpian. You know, the thin spring roll where you roll it up yourself.
And, yeah, I love that. Oh, with the ice cream and the peanut powder.
Yeah, the dessert ones with ice cream.
And coriander.
Coriander. It's such a weird mix.
It just sounds so fucking weird, but it is just,
the best
dessert. It's so delicious. It's a street food, basically, guys. And you see it made in front of you, and it is very popular. I had it this time going back to Taiwan.
Yeah.
Couldn't miss it.
So that's,
I have to say, the ice cream is the most unusual flavor. It's kind of like, what is the ice cream flavor? Because it's white.
Well, traditionally, you use the taro flavor.
Taro, that's it.
Yeah, taro, peanut, and coriander. Yeah.
Coriander.
It sounds weird.
Perfect. Peanut powder. Coriander, it's very strange, but it's really good.
That's a sweet flavor one, the spring roll, and then you have the savory one where you roll it up yourself. Our mom usually will prepare like stir-fried bean sprout, cabbage, a lot of vegetarian ingredients, tofu, and you know, egg, and I think she does sometimes pork. But then you roll it up with peanuts and icing sugar and coriander.
And coriander,
That's the flavor. That's really
and it's it's a fantastic flavor. You really need to try it to understand the depth of its culinary spectacularness.
Okay. So besides Qingmingjie, which is the tomb sweeping. First of all, let's start our chat today with, I want to ask you, do you watch lifestyle shows nowadays?
I don't watch.
Dave,
because we bought up what?
We grew up watching like lifestyle shows.
Oh yeah, Better Homes and Gardens, 7:30 on Channel 7, Friday nights. It was a huge event in the Tu household. Huge event. Lifestyle shows. Well, the only no, I wouldn't say I do. I do like watching YouTube shorts of Vogue, Get Ready With Me, and What's in My Bag, and
Really?
makeup routines, or like this is my nighttime makeup routine. I used to love them. I've kind of swapped in the last year or so. I'd say in the last month to a couple of months, I've become obsessed with Never Too Small. Now, Never Too Small is a YouTube channel that basically it's like AD open house, except we go into the houses, we go into the apartments of very small residential
Oh,
units, and they're usually they're not usually they're all of them are designed by very fancy interior designers. They're all architecturally designed. Basically, they're all like around 50, between 50 to 100 square meters, so tiny spaces.
very small.
And it's really just a way for people to see how very clever architects and also very rich people, because you need a lot of money to do all this, that just goes without saying, have managed to use a lot of to manage to bend spaces cleverly, and you get some niche ideas about how to use space in a very clever way. And I really like it. Like I've started starting my day actually in the mornings before work watching one of these videos, because they're only about 5 to 10 minutes long, and they're just such a great way to see how other people live. So all of these apartments are from around the world. So there's Brazil, there's Spain, there's obviously Japan, a lot of Tokyo, because Tokyo is so poor, space poor, like as in people are so crammed together. There's Sydney, there's Paris, Berlin, just like so many different. It's also just a good way to see how other neighborhoods are, other what na other neighborhoods, globally speaking, are like. And I find it very, very, very interesting. And I guess it's part of me becoming older and being more like, oh, actually, I need to think about now that I'm no longer, young, I need to think about actually the realities of my living spaces. And now that I have more income, actually, the possibility of me having agency to one day maybe even design my own place if I could afford it. But that's just a long answer to your question of do I watch lifestyle? And I guess that just sort of fits into the lifestyle
It does.
category. Yeah. Well, what about you? What are you watching?
Before we move on to my choices of lifestyle shows, what sort of people appears in those kind of videos?
Okay, so I
Usually, are they mostly like younger, or do they have kids, or do they just have pets, or are they single
yeah.
by themselves?
Okay, so it's a spread, but most of them, obviously, because the spaces are small, most of them are just couples without children. The ones that I've seen don't have pets. There's a few of them that have pets. But like I said, by design, the smallness of it, usually the smallness of the units, usually it means that they're only the people that they profile are couples. Usually towards the younger side. I have seen a couple that are older. I prefer the videos where the owners are also the designers, so they're actually living there. But I've actually found a lot of the videos I've stumbled upon are actually the designers, the architects speaking about the place. So they'll be like, oh, my client wanted this. My client's a journalist. He prefers, and he doesn't cook a lot, so he prefers a big bookshelf over to a big kitchen, things like that. And the first video I saw was like a really trendy young couple who lived in Amsterdam. That was the first foray, my first foray into Never Too Small. But it's like I got a huge following online.
Nice. That's so interesting. Does it make you think about how you store your things or what sort of things that you keep or not to keep? Because I'm in
No.
the process, the past few weeks, we're in the process of moving our kids' room, and it's always a headache. And I always tell you that I have a stroke whenever I have to, tidy up my kids' stuff.
No, it hasn't, because we live in a rental, so There's nothing we can do right now.
For me, I don't really get the choice of what I want to ch watch lifestyle show wise because it's usually family time. By saying that, in the past few years, I watch a lot of tourism sort of traveling shows, you know, that I'm obsessed watching Taiwan's tourism shows, and I send you links of, you know, where to eat and where to in Taiwan quite frequently. But my family's been watching Blown Away, which is for some reason, my daughter's obsessed about like competition shows. Like she wants to see compete in anything. Like she was watching baking competition, and Blown Away is one of these very unusual, and you never think of it, you know, maybe 20 years ago. About or it's a show about glass blowing, and you create glass pieces, art competition, and by the end of the show, there will be one winner wins this sort of like an art residency and maybe like $50,000. And each episode they have a theme, and they would tell the competitors what sort of techniques that they want to see. And it was just really fascinating because when my husband and my daughter started watching about a year ago, the very first season, I thought it was so boring. I'm like, who the hell want to sit through 30 minutes looking at people doing glass blowing? But eventually, by the end of the second season, I joined them. I start watching it. It's actually quite good because you look. They talk about their life, they talk about the intricacies and the details of their design and how each art products that they came up with affects them or where they get the ideas from. And they're all very beautiful pieces, yeah, by the end of the competition. It's just so amazing that never in a million years that anyone would have thought to produce a competition show, you know, about glass blowing. Because I remember, like, we don't really know anything about glass blowing except for I have seen there used to be a like a workshop back in the 90s at the Rocks Market, and that's like an artist who does glass blowing, and it always looks fascinating, but looks so dangerous as well because the heat and the fragility of the glass. But yeah, Blown Away is something that we watched. And what I'm about to get to is something I don't think that you will watch, but it's
Wait. Before you do that, where is glass blowing from?
Blown Away, it's on
Blown
Netflix.
away. No, as in what country?
It's US. It's based in
Oh, okay,
US.
so it's American.
Yeah.
It's
And
an
the only
American
reason
show.
I
Okay.
catched up, I'm pretty sure that I started watching in season 3 because they had a Japanese competitor.
Yeah,
It
right.
was really good. Yeah. It was really good. Yeah. I watched it because it was a Japanese competitor. But unfortunately, she didn't win in that season. Yeah. Anyway, so the next show that I want to share with our listeners, I am not quite sure whether or not you'll be interested, but we watch for the. Because it's an Asian program, and we watch for the. It's just pure entertainment. It's Physical 100. I don't know if I mentioned it in our previous episodes. Physical 100 is like this fitness competition. It's trying to present this sort of subversive of the stereotypical Asian physical image. So they have 100 competitors.
And South Korean. So
South
paint the picture for us. Pa
yeah
South Korean, a hundred
South
people.
across the range of mostly people from the fitness and sports industry, yeah, but there will be a few like from like model industry, will be people who
Influencers, YouTubers.
YouTubers, yeah, and they are all very very fit to the point that you think, and also there's body, of course there's bodybuilders as well, to the point that you don't see. You hardly seen so many Asians in those physical forms come together, you know, in one show. And they're so polite as well, to the point that even during the games where they have to compete, They keep apologizing to the opposing team while they're holding each other down. Where during one of the game that we'd have to go through the maze and picking up sandbags and putting it into another location. And during a certain time, they have to stop their opposing team members. And just looking at the subtitles, like Team A is trying to stop Team B. And while they're holding the other team members down, and they keep saying that, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." It's just to the point that you think they're in the competition, but they're apologizing at the same time. Yeah, and such good sportsmanship as well. I love Koreans. Not that I don't like other Asians, but they're
Yeah,
just.
that was a bit weird, that comment, Helen. Like Helen said, the show is in its second season. It was huge, popular first season, exploded. South Korean, media obviously has been, making its mark in the West for several years now. And this show has 100 people competing in a series of physical activities, physical feats. And I am really not interested in anything to do with physical fitness.
I know.
Less, even less interested in watching anyone do anything physical. Me and sport, I just like, I have nothing. I got nothing.
I don't mind watching
And
ball games, but I like watching competitions like this. As in
right, okay. Last week and over the Easter holiday, my family and I, Helen weren't was not involved because Helen decided not to drive 3.5 hours to see us. We rented an Airbnb down south and we stayed with my whole fam together. And my brother is like Helen, more interested than me in fitness. So one night he put on the first episode of the second season. And I reluctantly sat on the couch and watched it. But then I left at around half an hour because the first half an hour, it was just fucking introducing all of them. I was
Was
so
in the
bored.
beginning, yeah, it
I
drags
was like,
along.
oh, it's so bored. And then
Very slow
the
paced.
first feat that they had to do was just run on a treadmill. It was just like not interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not very mind challenging, but you watch it for the sake of, I don't know.
I'm
I
not
don't
saying that I need to be mind challenged. I'm just saying I'm not
know.
interested in
People
people,
run.
like I'm not interested in people's relationship with their bodies at this moment in my life. Yeah. I'm just there's just something about that relationship. I don't know. The cognitive versus the physical sort of like mind body nature of philosophy. I just like I got nothing. I got nothing. Just like not interested. It bores me. It really bores me. Maybe I don't know, maybe because I just have no I know I don't have a conflicting or an interesting relationship with my own body. So
But you do Pilates and yoga.
yeah, I exercise. My exercise is very gentle and my exercise is I'd say 20% fitness and 80% mentality. Like I do 80% for my mental well-being. Like I do yoga every morning because it just puts me in a better mood for the rest of the day.
Yeah, same. I do yoga every day, but I think I am happy to do diverse sort of, all sorts of kind of sports and exercise, and I'm open to watch any sort of lifestyle shows, I think.
Right, yep.
Hi there. If you're new to our show, thanks for tuning in into our program, and we hope you will stay with us for a very long time. And if you are a regular listener, we're forever grateful for your continuous support throughout this period of uncertainty. It has really helped this podcast to gain a great exposure, as our mission is to center the perspectives of people who look like us, who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, or Spotify and leave a rating and review. And of course, as a small podcast program, we rely on listeners' support to continue this work. Please do check out our Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation in order for us to continue to advocate the intersectionality in the podcast industry.
Thank you.
Let's start with our last fortnight's cultural consumption. I've been catching up with the things that Jesse has watched and read. I want to start with the, maybe let me see, which one do I want to start with? Let's start with Poor Things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with something that's not very, I don't know how to describe it. I struggled to finish the movie.
Did you end up finishing it?
We end up finishing it. We watched for the first 45 minutes. We got tired of it. And we only returned to finish the movie like about a couple of days later.
Mm-hmm.
My husband did comment that he asked, oh, is it a Wes Anderson film?
It's not. Yeah.
Because it's got that kind of whimsical, weird, like fantastical sort of image.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of review that I should be giving. Like, I don't like it personally.
Just say that. That's a review.
I just don't like it. Yeah. It's narrative wise, it's a very ancient sort of trope of feminist empowerment by the male gaze. Okay, it's infantilizing females. It was poorly done. I don't disagree with sex scenes, but it's very they're all very mechanical.
Mm.
It looked like it's trying to copy French films.
Mm.
It was done not a very nice way, I think. Yeah, and mm-hmm. apart from the, you know, the luxurious set design and costume.
Mm. Incredible. Yeah. Incredible set design and production
design. There was anything positive about it apart from the set design and the costumes. The actors were okay. Mark Ruffalo was...
I love him, Mark Ruffalo.
I don't think this character is convincing at all. Like for
right.
Because the previous roles that he played was just very different to this role in Poor Things.
Mm-hmm.
And Emma Stone was... No, I do agree that it takes a lot of guts to do sex scenes, but I reckon her other works were much better. Yeah. Like, even I enjoy watching Easy A. Like, that's her, one of her earlier works.
Yeah, I don't love that film.
But Poor Scene, I don't know. I just, when I didn't read any reviews before watching the film, because I tried to avoid reading it because it seems like such a weird movie, so I avoid all the reviews. And then after watching it, I looked up I purposely looked up Poor Things bad reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came up with the first one you came up with from a website called Observer. It says Poor Things, see it and hate yourself in the morning.
Really? What was the premise of the main argument of the review?
Well, it says if you're naive enough to believe anything chock full of chalk for its own sake is automatically praiseworthy, then open your wallet and see it for yourself. It's just pretty much, it just says that it's weird. And let me see. So it says, according to an interview in the New York Times, the weird director, what's his name? Yorgos Lanthimos, I believe,
mm-hmm.
is also the same director of The Lobster, which I actually prefer and enjoy. So the
and The Favourite.
Yeah, and The Favourite as well. So I don't know why this one wasn't, you know.
Well, no such thing as loving everything that a director puts out, you know, just like I don't unanimously love every work that my favourite writers don't always put out good stuff, you know. Yeah. So it's normal, it's fine.
Yeah. So the weird director rejects anything that resembles convention and rehearses his actors reciting their lines while doing log roles. I don't even know what that means. Some sort of exercise. Walking backwards or with their eyes closed. And there wasn't much praise throughout this article. It says that Poor Things is a surreal mix of science fiction and pornography fairy tale by the loopy Greek director Yorgos Lanthimos may not be the worst commercially intended movie ever made, but it is unquestionably the filthiest. In the chaotic cacophony of mixed reviews, it has been described as weird, exhausting, repugnant, wrenchy, demented, twisted, and bonkers. Those are the good reviews.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, it was obviously a movie that divided a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lovers, a lot of haters. I feel like I'm so over talking about this movie because I don't know what else new I can say about it that I haven't already said. And for me, all I'm going to say is that it was flat for me. It just sat very flatly. I didn't connect to it emotionally at all. And that the final thing I'd say is that my thoughts about the movie is so immensely affected by one of my dear friends' reaction to the movie. And she is a director,
mm-hmm.
very, very esteemed director. And she told me that she thought the movie was insultingly misogynistic. After she told me that, I could not stop hearing her voice. Every time anyone asks me about Poor Things, I just think of my friend's reaction. And I kind of just I can't, that's all I say.
Yeah, I do regret, I do regret a little bit, like, we wasted like 2.5 hours watching.
No, I don't believe any time is wasted. There's no such thing as time wasted when you're consuming any kind of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I emphatically believe that.
Okay, so moving on to the other film that Jesse watched and you recommended,
mm-hmm.
much better.
Yeah.
Which is another Oscar nomination. And did it win any awards? I think it won.
It did. So Cord Jefferson won Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, that's right.
It's adapted from Everett Purcell. Everett Purcell. That guy. His 2001 novel, Erasure. And yeah, I, like I said in my review last week, so much heart. Mm. So much heart, so much humor, done wittily. Loved it. What did you think?
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, much, much better. It's such a gentle pace. It didn't rush. And there were some parts that I had to turn and ask my husband. It's like, I'm just curious, does this really happen in the US? Like, for example, there was a scene where that he, at the earlier section of the movie where he went and see his sister, the protagonist. And then he visits her at her workplace, which is an
abortion
clinic. And he had to walk through a metal detector. And I look at my husband and I'm going, is this serious? He goes, yeah.
Why would you have to ask your husband? You should know more about this than your husband.
I'm not asking him. I'm just looking at him puzzling. I'm like, oh, okay, does this really happen in the US? He goes, yeah, it's in the US. What do you expect? So apparently in the novel, the sister didn't die from
a heart attack. She dies from a shooting. Yeah. So yeah. She's shot. Okay. Yeah. For working at an abortion clinic. And I'm very curious to know why the filmmakers decided to change that. What do you think? Why do you think they changed it?
What I was thinking as well. Why do they like change that narrative?
Do you know what I think?
Yeah, okay, give us your thought.
I think that it's because for her to have died in a shooting because of her political beliefs would have perhaps, because it's such a weighted issue, women's reproductive rights in America, especially at this moment, I feel like the filmmaker was like, if we include this in the movie, we would have to include it in a really significant and lengthy way, and they were like, you know what, this is a 2-hour movie, we're trying to extract 2 hours story from a 250-page book, let's just be really intentional about what we can deal with here in terms of themes. Yeah. And they were like, obviously the movie and the book deal with a lot of different themes, but I think the film, because of its limitations, the movie makers were like, we'll just have to stick to XYZ themes. And so I think because of that, they were like, oh, let's just make her die some other way, some non-political way, you know, so that we can just make sure we focus the movie on racism in the publishing industry, on yeah, that's basically what the movie's about, racism in the publishing industry. I think that they just thought let's just focus on this one issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I could agree with you, because if they do follow the what the novel has portrayed, you know, she was killed by the abortion shooters, that would just drag out too much. I think it would just makes it so political. Not that I think that it shouldn't be presented in the movie, but I think it will make it, for one, it will be harder for the director and the producers to create that scene, probably more expensive, I'm guessing. And two, it was just like you kind of diverted the intention of what the movie wanted to express. Like, main thing is about race in the publishing industry. Yeah. What do you think is the funniest part for you throughout the whole
movie? Obviously the scene where the two black characters who have been invited to be judges of a literary prize wanted to veto a book that, so if you haven't seen it, very quick synopsis, Jeffrey Wright plays a character who is down in the sticks, published a few books, is now teaching writing, but is not successful. He sees a very popular young black author, a female played by Issa Rae, start to rise up in, she's getting massive success with a book which he feels plays to all the tropes that white America has about black Americans. And he decides, you know, fuck this, I'm just going to play into the tropes too. And then he writes the book under a pseudonym. The book becomes a huge bestseller. And then now this book is actually entered into the prize in which he is now the judge. Mm-hmm. And the funniest scene, obviously, without a doubt, is the scene where he and Issa Rae's character want to veto this book because they both feel it's stereotypically racist towards black Americans. And then the three other white judges say, nah, like they just ignore them and say, no, we're going to let this book win. We're choosing it. We're deciding this is a winner. I think it's important that we listen to black voices. Black voices, right now. Yeah. And then like she's completely
look at each other like side eyes and like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was a fantastic scene.
Yeah. I love that scene as well. I think that's one of the funniest part of the movie. And I thought that the phone meeting with the white publishers and the moment that he decided to change the title.
Yeah,
I can't even remember the original title he came up with, but he wants to push the boundaries and say that I want to change the title to fuck, and they hesitated and they still went with it.
Yeah, I know. and the white publisher, by the way, this white woman publisher, she is the publisher who is famous from Younger. So it was very funny to see her.
Yeah. I thought the ending was done very clever. I love the
ending. Yeah, it's just...
It's a bit cliche, but it's funny, yeah.
It made me really want to read the book. I really, really want to read the book.
Yeah, the possibilities of how to end this movie is just, yeah.
Yeah, it gets kind of meta.
Yeah. Let's move on to books. So I believe a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned the TV drama Three Women. Is it on Binge or Stan at the moment?
It's on Stan.
Yeah. It reminded me that the book was actually lying somewhere around my house. And we were doing this mini internal move for my kids. So Three Women by Lisa Tadeo. Yeah. Brilliant writer. I don't think that I have read any other books this quickly in the past 12 months. I read it within 5 days.
Mm.
Her writing matches my reading frequency, which I regard to, you know, is the work that is not difficult to read. It's very reader friendly. It's also insightful, soulful, and packed just with enough emotions that you don't feel like she's very self-centered. It's very smooth. I think it's very intricate and not complicated, very straightforward. She wrote, you know, pretty much the story of the three women. I kept thinking why it made me want to read this book within, you know, so quickly, is that it's kind of like the aspect of gossip and the idea of peeping into other people's dark secrets.
Yeah, of course, in their lives.
Yeah, it's kind of like a voyeuristic of human that kind of satisfies that need of knowing other people's secrets. So if, I don't want to say it's entertaining, but it's definitely a good read, I think. Three Women, yeah.
I thought it was deeply entertaining. Yeah, this book, yeah, of course. It was so well read, written, like you said. Mm-hmm. And it, when I read it, when it came out, it monumentally shifted me, something inside me.
Okay.
Hugely, hugely. I loved, my favorite female story out of this from Maggie Sloan and Lena, my favorite was Lena, because I think I related to Lena the most. Like, she's in a super lonely relationship, husband doesn't kiss her, and she drives like 4 hours to see an ex-boyfriend who like doesn't even give her the day, time of day. Like, I know that. I've not literally done that, but I know, but I've definitely done things that I'm ashamed of doing, all for the purpose of getting some male attention or male validation from someone who just is so blatantly, clearly not going to give you what you need. And so I found Lena's story the most relatable. Sloan and Maggie, both their stories were really sad as well, obviously. I find it interesting that in the adaptation, which I haven't watched because I refuse to watch any show that requires me to sit for an hour per episode.
Oh, that's too long.
Yeah, that's fucking too long, man. Unless it's The Wire, which actually I'm going through right now. That's classic television, so that's an exception. Yeah, it's interesting that in the adaptation, they decide, because, you know, when the book came out, there was a bit of criticism that all three women are white. So the TV adaptation tries to tackle that by basically they've changed the Sloane character into a black character, into a black woman. I mean, one of the best nonfiction titles I've ever read. I have not enjoyed anything Lisa Tadeo has read since.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's read, I believe she has come out with 2 fiction works.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm not sure. I think one was Animal and then another one. I'm not sure what it was, but I think she's a fantastic non-fiction writer, and I'll just stop with that.
Okay, that's interesting, because I read it, I treat this book as a fiction. I don't know why, because it probably kind of...
What do you mean you treated this book like fiction? What does that mean?
I treated it as a fiction because it distanced me from, like, I think that it's just that you've made up story. Like, I don't.
So you thought it was fiction?
No. I know it was a non-fiction, but I read it as a non... I know that it's a non-fiction, but I read it as a fiction. I don't know how to explain it, but it's
What
just...
does that mean?
Like, I read it as... I treat these people not very real.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. That's so weird. Why would you do that? Because, like, the appeal for me is that these are real women. That's what really...
Yeah, these are real women. Yeah, but the way that she wrote it, it's, like, the sort of nonfiction books that I read are all very textbook-based.
Yeah, you read a lot of academic shit.
Yeah, academic.
Whereas this is very personable and internal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Interior. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Narrative and the story that she wrote. You know,
are you saying you got the feeling that you were reading a fiction book? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's how I was feeling. Yeah, but I know they're real people because, you know, the Maggie Wickens. What's her surname? Yeah, is she the only woman that used her real name?
Right.
As Lena and Salon, they used their, you know. So not the real name for the book, yeah.
Do you think you'll watch the adaptation?
Not really. Now you say that it's 1 hour per episode.
Yeah, I cannot do that.
I don't think I can, yeah. And I do feel like I don't know which woman that I feel related the most. It just feels very distant. All of the three women's stories they're all very fascinating. They're all very, but I just don't feel like there's, I don't feel like there's any connection with me. Yeah, but I feel deeply saddened the most with Lena, I think. Yeah. Because the way that she's been treated by the man around her and deep insecurity that she has with a body, with a desire, I think most women will feel very related to it. Yeah, okay.
Any final thoughts?
Oh, that's it. That's it from me this week. Yeah, and my dog is just trying to block me.
Well, I'm looking forward next week to Civil War. I'm going to a special screening of it. So very excited about that. Alex Garland's latest action flick, starring Kirsten Dunst, one of my favorite actors. That's what I'm looking forward to this week. What about you? What are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking for, hopefully, if I can get a night off this weekend, we might go and see the anatomy.
Ghostbusters?
Nah, the Anatomy of the Fall.
Oh, wow, nice.
You haven't seen
Very
that one
posh.
yet?
No, I haven't, but everyone I've spoken to has loved it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, has raved about it.
So apparently there's a dog in it as well. So
Yes, a very good dog actor who featured at the
the
Oscars as well. Yeah. Okay, so that's why you're seeing it.
dog and also the intricacy of the whole genre, I think. Yeah. Apparently a lot of people have different, like some people like you, a lot of people held a certain expectations of going to see that film. They think it's like a murder mystery sort of detective sort of trope, but then it's actually not. So I
What
don't
is it actually?
well, I haven't read any, I don't want to read any reviews. That's why I haven't read anything about it. I've only seen the trailer, and the trailer makes it seem so unpredictable, like you don't know what the actual movie is about. So
Yeah, right. Interesting.
I think that's the attraction of it.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the end of our episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google, and Apple, and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page to make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. That's it from us this week, and we'll chat to you next time.
Bye.